So I love soccer, and I am unapologetic. I feel like everything in life can be related to soccer, or Star Wars, or both. The game of soccer, affectionately called the beautiful game, is amazing in its complexity and its simplicity. I love taking people to their first game and talking them through what is happening. It's a totally different experience than other venues. The fans have songs they sing, drums they bang, horns they blow. The players even jump onto the podium after the game and lead the fans in chants. It's really something remarkable that other sports venues don't have here. So for those of you who lead normal lives and don't listen to various soccer podcasts and radio stations almost constantly in your free time, you may not have heard about the big controversy sweeping the soccer world right now. This controversy has struck a nerve with every single person who watches soccer regularly. No one is neutral. The international governing body, FIFA, is even looking at implementing it in the World Cup next year. They want to add video replay. When I say this, most American sports fans, they think it's a no-brainer. I think even most Americans would say that it's a no-brainer to add video replay. It makes the game fair. That way, the team on the end of a bad call doesn't get punished. That way, I feel like we can all relate to this call to fairness. Who wants to lose because of human error? We can't let it stand if there's a way to make the real winners win. Fairness is one of those prized American ideals. The next time you're at the grocery store, stop what you're doing and just watch how people cash out. Everyone forms a perfect line, and there are rules to these lines. First, order of arrival is order of service. Second, the order cannot be changed without the consent of all parties involved. Third, don't have anyone join you who wasn't with you. This isn't even to mention how unfair it is for people with 10 items to be in line behind people with grocery carts full of items. You know what we could do? We could make certain cashiers only check out people with fewer than 12 items. That would solve that unfair situation. Except now we have to make sure that people don't think 15 items is fewer than 12, because that would be unfair. This cult of fairness is everywhere. It invades not only our daily lives in grocery stores, but also in our politics. Listen to how people talk about politics. Liberals talk about how it isn't fair for a struggling parent to not be able to afford food for their child because of another person's greed. Conservatives talk about how it isn't fair to make that same parent pay high taxes on programs that they'd never use, rather than letting that parent keep the money and spend it on what they feel they should. No matter what our personal opinions are, there's an understanding of fairness that's present in both of them. Religion has also tried to solve this issue of fairness. Hell, purgatory, heaven, karma, all these attempts to answer the basic questions of fairness. Why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? I'm a good person, do I get rewarded? My neighbor isn't a good person, do they get punished? We seek out and crave these answers. We want to know that in the end, everything is fair, that people get what they deserve. This is why I absolutely love what Jason Davis said on his radio show on June 19th. He's trying to dive into our notion of fairness and show how it directly conflicts with the fact that life is not black and white. That perhaps even our understanding of what is fair, what is black and white, is colored by our own perceptions of the world. One of my favorite lines from that quote from Jason Davis is, it seems as though everybody is intent on pushing the game, and even wider, it's everything else in life, that it's always black and white. It's always binary, yes or no, penalty or not, red card or not. To think about how everything needs to be fair all the time is to say that life is always black and white, right or wrong. Of course, in this outlook, the opposite of being fair is being unfair. Therefore, anyone who opposes our measures to make something fair, we view them as being unfair. Reality, though, I doubt, is this clear cut. My favorite UU theologian, Forrest Church, attempts to get at this in a metaphor. In his book, Cathedral of the World, he imagines that each religion is a stunningly beautiful stained glass window in a giant cathedral. Each window is gorgeous and fills the worshipers before it with awe and wonder and answers. Some worshipers lose sight of the other windows and claim that their window is the only window of truth, that all the others are fake. Others are overwhelmed by all the windows and claim that the windows are preposterous and that we should all get together in the middle and do something a little bit more practical. But what both of these people are forgetting is that there is one light illuminating all of these windows. The cathedral Forest Church provides is not black and white. There is no one system of fairness and justice held up above another. And Forest Church offers no solutions to this quandary. He simply points to the cathedral in awe. This leads to my next favorite line from Jason Davis. It seems to be tilting at windmills to try to undercut basic subjectivity. I think this is the hardest one for Westerners to grasp. The scientific revolution taught us that there is only one answer. Watch any cop show or doctor show and you'll find that. My wife Debbie and I have been watching the TV show House lately. The sick person comes in, they try a succession of things which are not right, until they figure out which one thing is causing the patient to be sick. They find the cure, and everything is fine in the end. There is only one right answer for Dr. House. While this may be true for certain things, I find it hard to believe it true of all things. When we interact with the world, it is impossible for us to see it but through our eyes. I don't like the old truism, before you judge someone, walk a mile in their shoes. Now the person judging me thinks they know me, are a mile away, and they have my shoes. It is impossible to fully comprehend the mystery of another person, never mind comprehend their motivation. And this is all to simply imply that there's one nice and neat motivation behind a person's actions. The linguist John McWhorter talks about how language is inherently messy, and we just have to live with it. Things don't always make sense logically, and nor should they. My feeling is that we work the same way. Our motivations for why we do things are not these neat little nice singular entities. We come from our inescapable pasts, which always color our view of the present. We are always thinking about the future and attempting to project onto it based on our past. And we are always full of contradictions, which we will not only never admit, but probably never see. And that is okay. Just like language, life is messy, and we just have to learn to live with it. To fight it, like what Jason Davis said, would be tilting at windmills. So if the world is gray, how do we navigate it? How is it that we are supposed to act for justice if our justice becomes just an opinion? Martin Luther King and Mohandas Gandhi have an answer. Think of the reasons behind their nonviolence that both of these modern prophets espoused. While Gandhi and Martin Luther King vehemently disagreed with the policies they were protesting, they never hated the people. Nonviolence wasn't about showing the other person how good they were. It wasn't about showing that they were better or superior than their oppressors. It was about looking at the other person and saying that their life mattered. That no matter what happened, the other person would be safe. That the other person was loved and was worth being loved. Gandhi went so far as to say that armies should be replaced by people who were willing to simply be killed. He claimed that this would warm the hearts of the other by acknowledging the basic divinity in those they were killing as their divinity was being acknowledged. I am not advocating for Gandhi's nonviolent army. I am advocating, though, for us to move through the world differently. Not labeling people as bad or evil, but acknowledging the complexity behind each person. That's why we lit a candle for Adam Lanza, the person who committed the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. We were horrified by his actions, but we were also horrified by the torment that had to have plagued that poor person to lead to that horrible act. We were able to point to the act and call the act evil without stripping the dignity from the perpetrator. I hope that we can put into practice the words, "Love is the doctrine of this church." To do this, we need only turn to our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We need to apply this to our daily lives. If certain politicians we don't like do certain things, perhaps we could think about how we word our Facebook posts a little nicer. If people from one political party seem to bug us, we need to remember that they're acting out of a sense of fairness, which is the same sense of fairness which gets us aggravated. And if we see people fighting, we need to remember that the people on both sides deserve to be cherished and loved, even if we can still point to the actions and say that they are wrong. We cannot speak to their motivations. We need to act with love as we speak out against the wrong actions. So in the real world, video replay would just cause people to argue over a video. We need to recognize that the world does not break down into rebellion and empire. The world breaks down into one people who all deserve to be loved. We need to be willing to open our hearts to being wrong. We need to avoid labeling the person and assuming their motivations. We simply need to be prepared to love first and ask questions later. Amen.